Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Pluto TV is the new leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all for free. There's no credit card needed and no sign-up is required. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and your hit movies. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Pluto TV is free on all of your favorite devices. Download Pluto TV today.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
Vice President Biden, you're just simply inaccurate in what you're describing. The reality is that our plan will bring health care to all Americans under a Medicare for All system. Your plan, by contrast, leaves out almost 10 million Americans. So I think that you should really think about what you're saying.
The plan, no matter how you cut it, costs $3 trillion. It will require middle class taxes to go up, not down. Thirdly, it will eliminate employer-based insurance. And fourthly, what happens in the meantime? The fact of the matter is, you should be able to, if you cross the border illegally, you should be able to be sent back. It's a crime. It's a crime, and it's not one that, in fact...
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Secretary Castro, please respond.
First of all, Mr. Vice President, it looks like one of us has learned the lessons of the past and one of us hasn't. Let me begin by telling you.
You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Delighted you were with us. And we have a lot to get to. The Democrat debates, what do they mean? Joining us now to discuss this very interesting round two of these Democrat debates, former governor of the great state of New Jersey, former presidential candidate Chris Christie. Governor Christie, it's great to have you on. Your take on clearly a Democrat party that now believes that Barack Obama is too conservative for where they want to be on most issues. Where does this leave the party vis-a-vis Trump and the general election?
Well, listen, as a supporter of the president last night, I watched that debate with joy. I just think the president's biggest problem right now is going to be having enough time to use all the material that they've given him over these first two rounds of debates. I mean, the idea that Barack Obama is too conservative, Barack Obama deported too many people, that we need to have a non-criminalized open border, that we need to have Medicare for all, and that even a public option is too conservative. It was the gift that kept on giving last night. And they all seem to be just moving as far left as they possibly can.
And Biden really does still seem, even with his slip-ups and kind of gaffes and so forth, he does seem to be the only one remotely in touch with America. And even that's a stretch. But he can't control this AOC plus three party. I mean, it's clear that they are the brain trust of the Democrat Party. I said this back in January. On Fox, and I stand by it. This is a party that certainly you and I and how we grew up, we don't recognize this Democrat Party at all.
No. Joe Biden last night looked like a guy who, just could not figure out what these other people didn't get about America. And listen, Joe Biden is no moderate. Let's start there.
Right.
But for goodness sakes, Joe Biden looked like the voice of reason last night. And that's scary for a Democratic Party who, is so deranged about the president. And I think this is a large part to do with it, Laura. They just so despise the president on a personal level. They all couldn't wait to call him a racist. They all couldn't wait, to get their own shot out. I mean, the juvenile comment by Kirsten Gillibrand about the first thing she'll do is Clorox the Oval Office, this is the kind of stuff that the American people watch, and they just shake their heads and turn them off. And so I watched that last night and just said, boy, the president must be really enjoying this because it gives him, a bottomless well of material to show how radical the Democratic Party has become.
There was a moment when de Blasio, with his lovely track record in New York, is going after Biden, as you mentioned, on deportations. Let's listen.
Did you say those deportations were a good idea? Or did you go to the president and say, this is a mistake, we shouldn't do it? Which one?
I was vice president. I am not the president. I keep my recommendation in private. Unlike you, I expect you would go ahead and say whatever was said privately with him. That's not what I do. What I do say to you is he moved to fundamentally change the system. That's what he did. That's what he did. But much more has to be done.
They are really at the point where they have to essentially attack Obama. They have to say Obama was terrible on these trade deals. He did not do a good job on manufacturing because, I mean, he didn't. I mean, multinational corporations, most of them supported Obama, and yet they're on a war against multinational corporations. And on the immigration stuff, 800,000 people were deported under Obama. So Obama's now, you know, just a couple of shades away in political viewpoint, I guess, from Donald Trump, according to the far left of the party.
No question. And listen, this is bad news for the Democratic Party when Bill de Blasio is defining the debate. You know, when Bill de Blasio is getting to be the fourth moderator, you know, that's not a good thing for the Democratic Party, because any of us who spend any time in New York City, and I spend a decent amount of time in New York City, knows that New York City has gotten nothing but worse, nothing but less livable under Bill de Blasio. But let's not waste time on him, because he'll be off the stage by the time the next debate comes around. And unfortunately for the people of New York City, back in Gracie Mansion doing whatever he does there. I think the bigger takeaway, Laura, from last night is that, you know, these folks are so out of touch with what the American people are really concerned about. It's shown by their obsession with impeachment on Capitol Hill. It's shown by the way they are talking about eliminating private insurance for everybody. And, you know, last night, Senator Harris just could not come clean with the American people. That's exactly what she's going to do. It was such a double-speak answer that she actually, at that moment, made Biden look good.
I could not agree more. Although, Kamala Harris came off that other, you know, debate riding high, her big scripted, choreographed attempted takedown of Biden, which ended up really doing nothing. And Biden's still up 20 points in everybody. But I thought she came across as overall just really weak last night. I didn't find her to be compelling in the slightest.
No, bad night for her last night. And I was saying this for weeks after the last debate, having gone through this myself. When you do really well in a debate, everybody's going to be coming after you the next time. And I said, let's see how she deals with it when you can't script an answer.
Right.
When you have to give and react to attacks coming in. She lost on the attacks on her health care plan, which is a mishmash of liberal nothing. She lost on her record as a prosecutor and was getting attacked, you know, as you saw last night, and didn't have good answers for the stuff that she did. She was getting attacked on her position on immigration as well. So it was not a good night for her, and she's going to have to go back and regroup. I will say that while I didn't agree with much of the substance of what he said last night, I think Cory Booker actually had a good night last night. He was in the arguments. He was not invisible as he had been in the first set of debates. And so now there's going to turn some attention to Booker, and that's going to become interesting to see how he reacts to that, whether he reacts better than Harris did, because she did not react well to her time in the barrel, as we say.
Well, Kamala Harris, her career mostly due to, you know, Willie Brown and San Francisco, and she rose to prominence, you know, with a kind of tough on crime approach. But now, being tough on crime is essentially being an authoritarian dictator in the Democrat Party. And this is what Tulsi Gabbard, when she decided to try to finish off Kamala Harris, this is how that went down.
She put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. There is no excuse for that. And the people who suffered under your reign as prosecutor, you owe them an apology.
she didn't have a real answer to that except to say that's not true.
No, her answer every time she got attacked was, that's simply not true. Well, you know, you've got to do better than that. And she should have been prepared for this stuff to be coming. And this shows not only a weakness on her part, but a weakness on the part of the staff that she has around her in terms of getting her well prepared to have answers ready to go on these kind of issues. Joe Biden was telegraphing for 4 weeks that he's going to be coming after her. And you know, if you're anybody else on that stage that wants to get at Biden, you got to go through Harris to get at Biden. So how these people weren't prepared for this, it's elementary political preparation, Laura. And it also should give people an indication of what kind of White House staff they might have as well. If any of these people were ever elected, if they can't get this right, they've got almost no hope of dealing with the complexities of running the federal government.
Well, I think now that we know that the party is for, for people crossing the border illegally, this is right. What Julian Castro said.
Open borders is a right-wing talking point. And frankly, I'm disappointed that some folks, including some folks on this stage, have taken the bait. The only way that we're going to guarantee that we don't have family separations in this country again is to repeal Section 1325 of the Immigration and Nationality Act. My immigration plan would also make sure that we put undocumented immigrants who haven't committed a serious crime on a pathway to citizenship, that we do a 21st century Marshall Plan with Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala so that we can get to the root of this challenge so people can find safety and opportunity at home instead of having to come to the United States. That's how we can be smarter, more effective, and more humane when it comes to immigration policy.
Listen, this goes back to the first debate when they all raised their hands for decriminalizing the border. And the fact here is that they are for open borders. It's not a Republican talking point. It is a fact. And they proved it again last night. To say that somehow people who come into this country without permission and that you're going to give them a civil penalty and somehow they're going to respond to that civil penalty is laughable. It's absolutely laughable. And the American people want fair immigration. They want immigration where people follow the rules, follow the law, and come here and become, Americans and contribute to our society. They don't want people who are sneaking in and not playing by the rules. And, you know, that's a fundamental American principle that these folks just don't seem to get.
No, and I've got to say, when they say, well, Castro says or Booker says, well, if you don't have a justifiable reason for being here, then you're going to have to go home and we'll do a Marshall Plan for Central America. Yet it will be basically jaywalking for crossing the border. How does that work? That's not the law. The law that exists on the books right now, Governor, is that if you have an outstanding order of deportation, you are to be removed from the country, period. Congress knows what the laws are that are on the books. So Obama was actually doing what the law required in deporting 800,000 people. That's what he was doing.
Yeah, that answer from Booker last night was just inexplicable. I mean, you know, I've been listening to Cory Booker for a decade and a half now, so I usually can understand what he's talking about. I didn't understand that one at all. No. And by the way, you know, this is part of the problem with a party that's being defined by the philosophy of AOC and Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Everyone else who at times had much more reasonable positions are just running as far left as they possibly can. And Joe Biden's left there watching these people run past him saying, don't you get it? We'll have no chance in the general election if you keep running that way. But no one seems to be listening to him at the moment.
No, it was terrifying.
Entertaining, though, Laura.
Now,
I can tell you, as a Republican, I watched it with a smile on my face most of the night because, you know, as someone who's been in this game for a long time and understands how you put campaigns together, man, there is so much material there. The President of the United States is going to have a ball with this when they finally do pick one of these candidates and we get into a one-on-one general election.
This is where they move the conversation to both the NYPD and Newark Police Department incidents.
The fact is that the bills that the president, the future president here, that the senator is talking about are bills that were passed years ago, and they're passed overwhelmingly. In 2007, you became mayor, and you had a police department that was, you went out and you hired Rudy Giuliani's guy. You engaged in stop and frisk. You had 75% of those stops reviewed as illegal. And then, in fact, and nothing happened.
The head of the ACLU has already said that I put forth national standard setting accountability. Mr. Vice President, I didn't interrupt you. Please show me that respect, sir.
There was nothing done for the entire 8 years he was mayor. There was nothing done to deal with the police department that was corrupt. Why did you announce in the first day a zero tolerance policy of stop and frisk?
Mr. Vice President, there's a saying in my community, you're dipping into the Kool-Aid and you don't even know the flavor. You need to.
I don't understand for the life of me how this plays on a national debate stage. But, Governor, suffice it to say that the stage came off as very anti-law enforcement. And so we're led to believe, after listening to their discussion about law enforcement, that law enforcement in Baltimore or New York or Newark, they're the biggest threat to public safety.
Oh, no question. I mean, listen, if you're a police officer or the family of a police officer watching that debate last night,
forget it.
You have to say to yourself, these people are simply not with me. And they want to, I not only have to worry about the criminals on the street now targeting me, I have to worry about Democratic politicians targeting me when I'm doing my job. And that's, you know, that's going to really hurt, not only politically with those voters, but other Americans who have great respect for what our law enforcement officers do every day and recognize what a tough job it is, what a necessary job it is. For Democrats to be able to throw away any support from law enforcement just continues to add to the Trump coalition.
Yeah, I mean, this is Cory Booker going after Biden for his, you know, his bill that he passed and pushed 4 years ago on crime. Let's listen.
Mr. Vice President has said that since the 1970s, every major crime bill, major and minor, has had his name on it. And, sir, those are your words, not mine. And this is one of those instances where the house was set on fire and you claimed responsibility for those laws. And you can't just now come out with a plan to put out that fire. We have got to have far more bold action on criminal justice reform, like having true marijuana justice.
Marijuana justice. That's now the big, argument
for
the Democrats.
Listen, as somebody who spent 7 years of my life enforcing these laws and watching what happens when marijuana was made, you know, is made even more broadly available, this is another
huge mistake
that the American people don't agree with.
Huge
they
mistake. I think this pot legalization is going to go down as one of the most damaging moves that we've made state to state to state across the country. I don't care how much money John Boehner's making on that marijuana advisory board he's on or board. This is a nightmare for young people, productivity, long-term mental health. It is a disaster. And the Democrats have just wrapped themselves all up into it.
Laura, it's blood money. And I've been saying this.
You've been so good on this.
Governor, it's blood money.
No, you are great on this.
It's blood money for the governments that are going to collect taxes on it. It's blood money for those people who are making the money off of it. We know there are study after study that shows that marijuana is a gateway drug. There is study after study that shows the impact it has on folks' brains. It is extraordinary to me, and you can see even some, you know, I never agree with a teachers union, almost on principle. But the Colorado Education Association has said that the number one challenge of public education in Colorado right now is legalized marijuana, because kids are getting them in edible form. And listen, I don't know about you, or I don't know how you did in math in school. I went to law school because I didn't do so well. It's tough enough for me to do math straight, let alone if I was high. And you know, these kind of things, marijuana justice, You know, those kind of phrases to me, justice on marijuana is keeping it out of the hands of our young people, keeping it out of the hands of the workers, where it's going to affect productivity in America in profound ways.
Chris Christie, here's the race conversation snippets that we that we had to listen to last night, and I had so many people messaging me saying Don Lemon, you know, why was he even on that stage? I mean, he's a vicious hater of the president, and this is what he asked.
How do you convince primary voters that you'd be the best nominee to take on President Trump and heal the racial divide in America? President Trump is pursuing a re-election strategy based in part on racial division. What do you say to those Trump voters who prioritize the economy over the president's bigotry? Why are you the best candidate to heal the racial divide that exists in this country today, which has been stoked by the president's racist rhetoric? After the president's racist tweets attacking Baltimore and Congressman Elijah Cummings, the mayor of Baltimore slammed the tweets and said to the president, and I quote here, help us.
It is just declared that President Trump is racist, because heaven forbid they have to argue this economy.
This is crazy, Laura. I've known the president for 18 years. The president is not a racist, and I've never seen him show, you know, racist tendencies in any way. And you know, the fact here is that they can't argue the economy. They can't argue the effect that deregulation has had positively on American productivity and the American economy. They can't argue about the fact that the president has been tough on China in a way we've needed to be tough for quite some time. And he's, you know, so they're going to this. And, you know, Don Lemon last night might as well, you know, either been on stage or a green room, you know, as a campaign manager for one of these candidates. And, but that's what CNN is doing. That's where they've moved. And I'm convinced that that's a big reason why they don't have nearly as many people watching them as they used to, because people just know that what's going on there is something that is contrary to the truth.
This is Eric Holder today in a tweet. To my fellow Democrats, be wary of attacking the Obama record. Build on it, expand on it. But there's little to be gained for you or the party by attacking a very successful and still popular Democratic president. I mean, they're like, wait a second. Hold a second. Aren't Michelle and I like global celebrities? Like, but even they can't control. Even the Obamas can't control where the, you know, where the nutbags are taking the Democrat Party. And Holder's like, wait a second.
It's so funny to watch.
It is hilarious.
It really is. And to watch these folks, you know, you're seeing some of the reaction this morning as I've watched some of the reporting on the debate. Interestingly, the media, who still is in love with President Obama, you know, are covering that part of it, covering that they've been attacking the president, you know, the former president. And you know, I think that they're all now these candidates who get crazed when they're up there. I mean, Kirsten Gillibrand last night, so desperate to remain on the stage, she'll say one thing more outrageous than the next.
Oh my God.
And remember, as you recall, Laura, this is someone who had a great rating from the NRA when she first got into office.
Oh no,
those days are long gone, boy. She's really gone. And completely gone off the cliff.
But if you close your eyes, Governor, if you close your eyes and you just listen to Kirsten Gillibrand, she's the same sorority girl that, you know, many of us remember at Dartmouth. She was a KKG sorority girl. And, well, this is what she said. She knows how to beat Trump.
To the people of Michigan, I know exactly how I beat President Trump. I've already done it. I took a bus tour to talk about Trump's broken promises here in Michigan. He promised no bad trade deals. Not only did he not have bad trade deals, he started a trade war with China, and he just signed on to another bad trade agreement with NAFTA 2.0.
Oh, first of all, she's never read NAFTA 2.0. It has better environmental and labor restrictions in it than NAFTA or the TPP or any of that stuff. So she doesn't know what she's talking about. But that's just a sad trajectory for a person who was never very smart, if you ask me.
Well, listen, and I've spoken to Governor David Paterson, the former governor of New York, who is the person who appointed her, and he has said one of the single biggest mistakes he made was appointing Kirsten Gillibrand. And so, you know, the fact is she's up there. Her 10 minutes are just about over. I literally saw her this morning, Laura, on CNN, asking people to send her a dollar. $1. She's so desperate to remain on the stage. And she said it that way. Just please send me a dollar so I can stay on the stage. That's pretty desperate stuff.
You have to, Democrats up there saying, well, people, don't believe what you're feeling. Don't believe your wages going up. Just believe that Trump is a bad guy. And if you vote for him, you're a bad guy. That's basically where the election has been for a long time. But now it's really here.
Well, I was speaking, you'll find this interesting, to an urban New Jersey Democrat mayor yesterday who was telling me that he was walking around, as he often does, around his city talking to citizens. And he said he met with a woman who voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, Hispanic woman, in one of the poorer cities in New Jersey. And he said to her, so what do you think of the presidential race so far? And she said, these people, meaning the Democrats, are crazy. And she said, I'm voting for Trump. She said, Trump has done exactly what he said he was going to do. And he said, and she said, that's going to make this country better for my children. So, you know, the Democrats don't recognize that people do believe what they see. And what they see is a better, stronger economy that's raising their wages, and that's more importantly to most parents, Laura, as you know, is providing greater hope for the future that their children will be able to, you know, enjoy the same type of economic success in this country. And that's the hope the president's providing, and you hear nothing but doom and gloom on that stage last night in that regard.
This was at the debate, and this is where he has to try to, I think, shore up his liberal environmentalist bona fides. Let's listen.
Just to clarify, would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out. We would make sure it's eliminated and no more subsidies for either one of those, either any fossil fuel.
I mean,
okay, so I guess that big Google conference they're having over there in Italy, they're all taking solar boats to get there.
Just turn out the lights, everybody, because that's what they're going to do.
That's actually funny, Governor. That's what Trump should just say, the turn out the lights party. That's actually a great slogan. You got to give that to Trump. That's hilarious.
I will. That's what they're doing. I mean, this is like, you know, the idea that we could be completely off of fossil fuels in 10 years is just laughable. And
oh my God, is that
giving
funny.
Away, as you know, an enormous economic advantage that the United States has now with the reserves of natural gas that we have all over this country. And so the idea that anybody would advocate for that is not only bad economically, but it is a huge mark against them from a national security perspective.
Oh, Governor Chris Christie, I love talking. I could talk to you all day. and there's one more soundbite we have to get you to react to, then we'll let you go. This is Kamala and Corey. They should take this act on the road.
I've read the report. There are 10 clear incidents of obstruction of justice by this president, and he needs to be held accountable. I've seen people go to prison for far less.
We have a president that is not acting like the leader of the free world. He is acting like an authoritarian against the actual Constitution that he swore an oath to uphold. I believe that we in the United States Congress should start impeachment proceedings immediately.
Okay, so
Bring it on, baby.
Yeah, I mean, because the American people have said repeatedly they don't want impeachment, but this is what they're going to cling to.
These folks are really, and this is the way Republicans need to look at it. Republicans and conservatives who are listening to you today need to look at it, in my opinion, this way. These people are not our adversaries. They are, in fact, our political best friends, the more they keep talking this way. I can only hope that Nancy Pelosi will give in and allow them to start impeachment proceedings against this president, and they will drive even more voters into the president's column for 2020. So, you know, Booker and Harris there are attempting to pander to the Tom Steyer wing of the party. And, you know, the bottom line is that he's never been successful at any of the stuff he's tried, Steyer. He's not successful on impeach now. And the people who advocate for this are advocating for something that's directly contrary to what the American people have told us they want them to do, which is to get to work dealing with the problems of America and work with the president to help solve some of those problems. And instead, they're still playing around with impeachment. If they want to do that, Laura, my view is, as it's always been, bring it on. Let's go. Happy to see you do it.
Well, Governor Chris Christie, thank you so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. Let's go to Cal in Ohio, where these manufacturing jobs numbers just came out for July and extremely impressive, comparing it to the rest of Europe, where these Democrats all want to tie us to for the climate accord and new deals with Europe. And Europe's going down the tubes. We don't want to go anywhere near to tying ourselves to Europe. Cal.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people don't understand what's going on in the ground. I was watching the debates last night and the discussion over health care, and I was laughing and crying. The only thing I could think of was 10 years ago, you people said you delivered the greatest solution to health care that ever existed. But now you're telling the entire world your first attempt was an utter failure and it needs to be replaced. Why would anyone give you another shot? Trump could own health care with one tweet.
Now, I think that, again, the Democrats are in a really tough spot, because to really be authentically anti-Trump in a way that comports with the energetic AOC plus three base of the party now, they have to throw Obama under the bus, because Obama was tougher on deportation than Trump. And Obama was in favor of all these trade deals that, you know, screwed our country over when it comes to manufacturing. So I don't see how they're going to be able to argue that that we need to go back to Obama, because Obama was very friendly with the multinational corporations, which is why they loved his China policy. And so now, if you're going to be Elizabeth Warren, how do you not criticize Obama? You have to. Let's go to Kristen in Florida. Kristen on the Laura Ingraham podcast.
Hi, Laura. I'm a school teacher here in Florida.
Great.
And my biggest concern is the immigration with open borders and decriminalizing. We already have a strained public school system as it is. And now all these children that will come in need to be educated, and they already have so many other needs. How I have yet to hear somebody talk about how they're going to upright that domino when it falls. And as a school teacher, I'll be the one on all the free programs because my paycheck will be so small, I won't have a choice.
I completely agree with you. I think when we look at what the Democrats' policies are really going to deliver, we really need to just start discussing the results of their policies. So if open borders is it, which clearly is it, then right now we have a million people who will have shown up at our southern border just this year. 1.1 million is the projection. Now, okay, each of them are going to have kids, and they're going to need a place to live. We're all the environmentalists, by the way, talk about climate change, that they want to have open borders in the United States. How is that going to work with climate change?
We should, in fact, and we have proposed, and we tried to get past in our administration, and I propose significantly increasing the number of legal immigrants who are able to come.
Legal immigration.
This country can tolerate a heck of a lot more people. And the reason we're the country we are is we've been able to cherry pick from the best of every culture.
We have? First of all, you can't say that when you're a Democrat. No culture is better than any other culture. So why are you cherry picking anyone? We've been able to cherry pick. I don't think so. First of all, every poll shows that people want immigration reduced or to remain the same. Gallup, every single time they poll this, reduced legal immigration, which is a million a year, or remain the same. I think it's like 20% of America wants more legal immigration, let alone more illegal immigration. But again, they're completely untethered to the facts. This is why Trump always runs circles around these people. Scott in New York on the Laura Ingraham podcast. Scott.
Hey, Laura. So it's funny you should bring that up about facts. You know, about 30 times last night, whenever there's an attack levied on someone, their response is, that's false. That's not true. They then go into their own talking points. So CNN has articles that they post the day after the debates called CNN fact check articles.
Yeah.
And it's amazing when you read these, you would expect to see some of these disputes resolved. In the first article, there was one false statement out of 17 they analyzed. All the rest are called true. And if they want to try to couch for someone, they'll say, oh, it was overstated. Or at one point they say Joe Biden must have misspoke. In the second article for last night, one of 19 things that they fact-checked, one, was deemed false. They used the word false over two articles. Last night it was about Biden saying that DACA was passed into law. When it wasn't passed into law, it was, you know, the technicality.
Executive order, yeah.
So CNN posts these articles, and now they're just fluff pieces that try to correct what these people say during the debates. How do you not fact-check?
Fact-check all of this.
Gabbard, how do you not fact-check Tulsi Gabbard accusing Kamala Harris of withholding exculpatory information of someone on death row? You don't fact-check that? I'd like that to be fact-checked.
No.
Instead, they fact-checked the claim that she supported higher bailouts. And here's what the CNN article said. Well, it's true that in 2004 she did. You should also know that in 2017 as a senator, 13 years later, she introduced or co-sponsored legislation asking for the cash for bailouts to be addressed or to be looked at.
They're rehabilitating. Their fact checks aren't so much fact checks. They're opportunities to rehabilitate front runners. Okay. When they're fact checking Trump, they're just destroying Trump. But when they're fact checking the Democrats, it's, well, although that might be technically false, the underlying import of what he or she was saying reveals a more complex picture. Right? That's how they always do it. By the way, did you know that animals who are lost or abandoned often have nowhere to go? They're put down by, you know, local animal control. They simply have no place for them. And that is so upsetting. Like, let's say a falcon or a baby deer who's, you know, a little fawn is found and no mother. What do you do? Well, guess what? There is an amazing animal super sanctuary. It's the only one of its kind. It's a beautiful mountaintop ranch called Delta Rescue. I want you to remember them in your estate plans. 100% of your donations go directly to the animals of the Delta Rescue super sanctuary. And you can actually contribute, help keep this incredible, compassionate place for abandoned animals operating, with 100% of your money going directly to the animals of the Delta Rescue Super Sanctuary. And a great way to give, I give just annually, but giving as part of your estate plan is phenomenal as well. And it's a tax-saving estate planning option you should all look at. So just go to deltarescue.org. That's O-R-G, deltarescue.org/Laura. Again, deltarescue.org/Laura. If you love animals as much as I do, you're going to want to see the great benefits of your estate contribution at deltarescue.org/Laura. They say home is where the heart is, and the reality is that home is where all of your precious belongings are located. Home is your sanctuary after a hard day's work. Home is a special place where you create memories with your family and your friends. So when you want to protect yourself and your most precious investment, go with the nation's number one smart home security provider, ADT. With ADT Smart Home Security, you'll have a team of professionals monitoring your home 24/7 using the latest innovations to safeguard your property. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com.
The only way that we're going to guarantee that these kinds of family separations don't happen in the future is that we need to repeal this law. There's still going to be consequences if somebody crosses the border. It's a civil action.
Esther,
what we need are politicians that actually have some guts on this issue.
Thank you, Secretary. Mr. Vice President, please your response.
I have guts enough to say his plan doesn't make sense. Here's the deal. The fact of the matter is that, in fact, when people cross the border illegally, it is illegal to do it unless they're seeking asylum. People should have to get in line. That's the problem.
This is a moment where you know that Joe Biden is the only remotely sane person on the stage at his advanced age. That Julian Castro is, I find him among all of them probably the most annoying. I don't know why. I find that's hard because Gillibrand is just... Well, I think that we can do this, and I'm going to white-splain things to people. Dinesh D'Souza, filmmaker, author extraordinaire, is with us. He's been watching this all play out. Dinesh has been writing about race since he was in college. where we were not classmates, but we were in college together and worked on the Dartmouth Review together all those years ago. But Dinesh, really, it's all a college campus now, right? I mean, doesn't it feel like we're living on a college campus, but it's actually the Democrat debates?
Absolutely. In fact, when I wrote Illiberal Education, my first book years ago, I described all this insanity on the campus. And I thought it was confined to the undergraduate menagerie. But how would we have guessed that all of this would metastasize into the larger culture, and the same craziness that we saw a generation ago is now become the norm in American politics?
Yeah, so when we have a party dependent on AOC plus three's worldview, Obama becomes the conservative. And you have to ultimately attack Obama. I was said this before the debate began. I said, they're really going to have to. I was sitting in the makeup chair. I said, for this to make sense, they have to throw off Obama like Trump threw off the Bushes. And people are like, they're not going to criticize Obama. And I said, they're going to have to. What happens during the debate? They all, you know, start piling on Obama's big initiatives, namely Obamacare and deportation.
Well, this is reminiscent a little bit of how the French Revolution went, right? You had mm-hmm. all these radicals, all these philosophers who were calling for people's heads to be chopped off and so on. And then the heads started being chopped off by the guillotine. And where did it all end? With the philosophers themselves going to the guillotine. So the mm-hmm. revolution becomes the terror. It eats its own children. So Obama, yes, he's getting the brunt of it, but he also started it.
Well, explain that so all of our listeners across the country, across the world, connect the dots with Obama's grievance politics, although he had a lot of charm. So you kind of didn't feel like it was as much about payback and grievance as it was, but he's kind of getting hoisted on his own petard here.
Yes. Obama introduced this, I would call it a new socialism. And I say new socialism because the old socialism was essentially it was class warfare between the rich and the poor, but it didn't have a racial component at all. In fact, it was very universalist in its thinking. The idea was that the working man in France has the same interests as the working man in Germany. So there was a kind of universalism toward early Marxism. But the Marxism and socialism that we're dealing with now is not like that. It's rooted in identity politics. It tries to marry class issues with race issues. Well, Obama was sort of the architect of all this because he put out this centrist facade, particularly in 2008, behind the scenes, it's really clear he was working to inflate the welfare rolls, work out these deals with Iran and Russia, you know, fan the flames of racial antagonism where he could. So he was about this Alinskyite project of fomenting a new type of discontent and building a new type of coalition, which ironically has now come back to haunt him.
Well, and I think we see this now with Kirsten Gillibrand, our old Dartmouth fellow alum, making this point. Let's listen.
I don't believe that it's the responsibility of Corey and Kamala to be the only voice that takes on these issues of institutional racism, systemic racism in our country. I think as a white woman of privilege, it is also my responsibility to lift up those voices that aren't being listened to. And I can talk to those white women in the suburbs that voted for Trump and explain to them what white privilege actually is. That when their son is walking down a street with a bag of M&Ms in his pocket, wearing a hoodie, his whiteness is what protects him from not being shot.
I mean, Dinesh, this is the worst sort of pandering. Mark Penn, he wrote a piece today for The Hill saying this is just the worst sort of pandering.
Well, I mean, it's worth dissecting for a little bit because let's follow the logic of what she's saying, right? On the first glance, you would think she's saying, listen, I have been unjustly elevated to a podium because of my white privilege. Okay, fine. Well, why don't you get out of the race then and make room for underprivileged minorities? Obviously, you're a beneficiary of affirmative action all your life, white affirmative action. But her point is, no. I don't actually want to impose any costs on myself. In fact, I'm uniquely positioned to be a missionary to the other evildoers, and the beauty of this is that I can now get all the benefits of my white privilege while imposing the cost on other whites who are not willing to make similar admissions of guilt.
So it comes down to Shelby Steele's white guilt that is now supposed to be you know, I think willingly and gladly adopted by all the rest of us. And to expiate yourself of this guilt, you have to constantly prostrate yourself to the Al Sharptons of the world. You have to reflexively say you're for reparations. And if
right.
you don't, they will and are branding you a racist. That and I talk to people in work environments, Dinesh, who are afraid to say anything today. They're afraid.
So being a leftist provides a certificate of racial immunity. You know, this is what Bill de Blasio claims. This is what Beto claims. This is what Gillibrand claims. It's ultimately a kind of fraud when you think about it, but it's a kind of cunning fraud because it essentially says, I'm now in the best position to testify. You know, having been a prostitute all my life, I'm now in a position to deliver the sermon and lecture people on the evils of prostitution.
Mm. Well, where does this all, you know, end up for us with this crowd? I mean, people were thinking that Joe Biden was was the least crazy of the people on stage, but when you're watching this crowd and their reaction to the crowd last night, they weren't really rallying to Biden all that much.
No. I mean, the voices of common sense are actually all coming from people who have 0 to 1%. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard, Hickenlooper. Yeah. Once in a while, a sensible point is made, but those guys aren't going anywhere. I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to the rank and file Democrat, right? And they're deciding, you know, should we go with Biden in the hope that he may be the best, in fact, the only guy who can even seriously challenge Trump? Or do we pick one of the kooks and just go for it? Our gal may end up in flames, but at least we will have gone ultimately with the candidate that fires our passion. I'm not sure which way that's going to end up.
This is David Axelrod with Chris Matthews last night.
Look, I think the good news for Joe Biden is this was maybe the best he could do. And the bad news is this may be the best he could do.
He seemed to be aware he was in a debate, which was a start for him. And I thought he was reciting a lot of stuff. In fact, a lot of times when he got to the end of his time, it was like he ran out of his recitation rather than his thought. I don't think that looked too good.
Well, I mean, they're worried about his acuity, his mental agility and acuity, clearly.
I mean, here is, I think, where the contrast with Trump becomes almost frightening. I mean, Trump is essentially a guy in his 70s. You know, he's a 75-year-old going on 50, and Biden is a 75-year-old going on 90. So that contrast, I think, will become very apparent, particularly when you put those two men head to head.
This is where Biden had a bit of a stumble. Let's listen.
If you agree with me, go to Joe 30330 and help me in this fight. Thank you very much.
Well.
Oh, dear.
That's like, it reminds me of some of our old professors at Dartmouth, Dinesh. That would have made it into the course guide at the Dartmouth Review. You know, Joe Biden, who is old,
Well, I mean, think of, he's been running for president since our undergraduate days.
Right.
And no wonder his brain seems to morph. I mean, recently when he confused Theresa May with Margaret Thatcher, it's like he doesn't really know if it's the 80s or the 21st century anymore.
What about Kamala Harris? I mean, they really built her up after that last debate. Oh, Kamala, she's the next Obama. I never saw it with her. I thought she was a phony. She, you know, got a lot of help from Willie Brown. I'm not going to say any more to launch her political career. And she has this way of talking, the way she laughs at everything that's not funny. She laughs through answers, which is so annoying.
I enjoyed kind of watching her mannerisms when Tulsi Gabbard was essentially, you know, dissecting her crime record, and just watching her face was kind of an exercise in Freudian psychology. But, you know, look, she has only one thing going for her, and that is that she's black and she's a woman. So she represents the kind of confluence of those two currents. And, you know, after Obama, after Hillary, it's almost like Obama was the African American, Hillary was the woman. Now, can we put the two together and get a black woman? And that's pretty much the basis for the Kamala Harris candidacy.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's The idea of any of these people going up against Trump makes no sense. And then you had Julian Castro, who, of all the annoying people up there, I find him the most annoying. He was Obama's HUD secretary, and he's up there complaining about Baltimore. I'm like, dude, you were the HUD secretary. What the heck did you do? Let's listen.
There are a lot of Americans right now that are hurting. The idea that America is doing just fine is wrong. Not only that, this president always likes to take credit like he did this. We've now had about 105 straight months of positive job growth, the longest streak in American history. Over 80 months of that was due to President Barack Obama. Thank you, Barack Obama.
Okay, so it's not a good economy. Just new manufacturing numbers just out for July were phenomenal. Not a good economy, but if it is, it's Obama. Oh, come on.
Yeah, no, I think, this is turning out to be great for Trump. I mean, I'm sure he's just eating the popcorn and relishing the way this is turning out. For the left, it's a real nightmare, because if they can beat Trump next year, they will portray the last 4 years as an unfortunate blip in the nation's history. But for them to have go after Trump for 4 years straight, the media, and then the American people affirm Trump once more, I mean, nothing could be a tighter slap on the face. The constipated expressions in 2020 will dwarf anything we saw in 16.
Oh, no, I don't. I'm actually worried about the mental health of, not to say that it seems all that great now, but of all these people on television, I mean, they just have to go into another line of work. I mean, I think being a liberal pundit means never having to say you're sorry, and being a Trump resistor means never having to say you're sorry. You just keep getting hired for these contracts, but like these people are never right about anything. I mean, they never seem to get it right.
Well, I think here's a case where the media and the left have whipped their base into a frenzy. They basically said, you know, Trump is Hitler. Trump is ultimately an authoritarian. Trump is going to subvert democracy. Now, Trump is doing none of those things. He's a president in the normal mode. Yeah, he's outspoken. But the truth of it is the normal functioning of American democracy goes on. And that is manifestly obvious to every American who has two eyes to see. So the base is now whipped up into a frenzy, and the Democratic candidates have now got to cater to this ravenous base that they created and the media created. So, guys, you've done what you did. You're dug in now. You can't pull out of the pit, and we're enjoying it.
Yeah, completely. Here's Joe Scarborough freaking out today.
I'm so confused. You have Barack Obama, people trashing Obamacare, and the sport of it is Republican talking points. And then they're trashing his immigration policies, which Donald Trump and the Republicans attacked and used to elect Donald Trump. We were sort of in a never-never land last night in that debate. Give me a break. What's wrong with you people?
I don't understand.
You're going up against Donald Trump and you're talking about defending Obamacare as Republican talking points? Who is advising you?
I mean, speaking of someone who's just going to, I think, his head will blow off his shoulders. He's so upset. He's upset every day, but I just think that in general they're the doom and gloom party now. They were hoping change under Obama. Now it's just doom and gloom. It's like Flint, Michigan,
you know, it's worth noting in these debates also who is not mentioned, right? And I think here's a time to note that Robert Mueller was the absent name in these debates. He almost, I don't even know if he came up once.
Yeah, they did a little bit with Kamala Harris and Booker. They said, well, we read the report. But yesterday, the first debate, it came up not at all. Russia collusion was not even, you know, mentioned.
Right, so this guy now is basically being given an indecent burial without even a eulogy. And let's remember how much of the left's hopes have hung on this. In the entire first Trump term. So, I mean, what an expenditure of energy and expectation, and it's all come through. So no wonder there's a kind of manic, jittery quality to this whole thing, because everything that they've bet on has become laughably untrue.
No, it's beyond terrifying. And I think that, again, Joe Scarborough and David Axelrod, and, you know, I think they're going to realize sometime soon that this tolerating the far left as they did and giving in to the far left and feeding the far left this series of, you know, of resentment snacks was just not going to – it was ultimately they were going to get eaten by it. They were going to be devoured by the fury. And that's where we are now. They're being devoured by their own grievance.
Yeah, and this was really Bernie Sanders' secret weapon. You know, if you want to find out how did the Bernie socialist agenda, you know, coming from a Rip Van Winkle figure who was sleeping on his neighbor's couch for God knows how long, how did his crazy hallucinations become the platform of the Democratic Party? Well, the answer is this ratcheting to the left. Everyone has got to prove that they are more to the left than the next guy, and that's the way they court the Democratic nomination. So Bernie had that going for him. By staking out this position, he was able magnetically to pull all these other figures into positions that they never held before, and I think are proving to be millstones around their neck for the future.
Dinesh D'Souza, again, he has documented this in film and in book for decades, warning us what we would get if we kept living in this identity politics world and kept feeding it at the universities where all this madness began, in the public schools, at the universities, and white guilt, and wrap that all into the learning of our young people. And this is what we've gotten. And we shouldn't be surprised that's where we are. But meanwhile, Donald Trump, I think, is laughing his you-know-what off. Dinesh, thank you very much. Let's go to Dean in New York. Dean.
Hey, Laura. How you doing? It's a pleasure to be on.
Thank you.
Just watching these debates the last two nights, and I've been an independent for years. I actually voted for Bill Clinton one time. I try to pick the most rational guy. I don't understand how any of these people, without voter fraud or illegal voting, have a chance. If you listen to them with an open mind, Delaney seems like he might be like the most rational guy there, successful in life, big pharma he's involved in. He doesn't have a chance of winning. He doesn't have a chance. Hillenkoopfer, you know, the guy sounds rational. He has some good ideas.
Hickenlooper,
these people don't have a chance of winning.
I don't see how it works. I just don't see how it works. I see this as a party that has been turned inside and out by a populist conservative, showing again the brilliance of Trump, not embracing the Bush way. Well, first of all, the Bush way wouldn't have beaten Hillary. We know that. So Trump took a lot of the issues off the table. The working class doing better under Trump. Wages doing better under Trump. Military interventionism. Trump wants to be friends with more countries. Immigration. Obama deported more than Trump, regrettably. Trade. Look, he did what Obama said he was going to do. Renegotiated NAFTA. Better deal with North Korea. Holding out with China, which is hurting soybean farmers, but the rest of America is doing really well. So he's taken a lot of these issues away from the Democrats, and that was brilliant. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. I want to thank all of our great sponsors again, including ADT Home Security, Pluto TV, and Delta Animal Rescue. America Now and Forever, the Laura Ingraham Podcast. See you next time.
If you agree with me, go to Joe 30330 and help me in this fight. Thank you very much.